Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for July 15th, 2021 will come to order. Before we move into motions for late submitted documents, the Vice Chair and I and the Commission would just like to make an announcement. So I'm going to ask if Mr. Kitcher is online, if Mr. Kitcher and Ms. Stephenson will pop up. This is a surprise, Mr. Kitcher, but we wanted to make an announcement to the public that the commission has made a selection for the permanent position for the Associate General Counsel of Enforcement. As many know that this is the largest division in the Office of General Counsel with 45 attorneys. They put out an incredible amount of work. They are just workhorses in the building. I come from that shop and I'm quite proud to always claim it as much as I can. But exciting news today is that we have a permanent lead for that division. So we wanted to take the opportunity to announce it to the public and say thank you and welcome aboard. Of course, Mr. Kitcher has been serving in an acting capacity since 2019 and has been with the agency since 2012, but it's always a great day to be able to say thank you for your continued service. And the commission has made a wonderful selection and you're joining us permanently in this position, Mr. Kitcher. I want to open it up to my colleagues if anyone else would like to join in. I see Ms. Stephenson is extremely happy for this day, but thank you, Mr. Kitcher. So colleagues?
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair.
I feel some hesitance just because, as you point out, it is a surprise, but I think Mr. Kitcher is used to surprises coming from us, and hopefully this is a happy one. So just on behalf of the Republican caucus, I'd like to echo your views. And Mr. Kitcher, as I've expressed to you privately, we're very lucky to have you. So thank you.
So I do want to, if there are any other colleagues that would like to join in and express any sentiments, please let me know. We don't want to embarrass Mr. Kitcher, but I think it's worthy of noting that we have filled this position permanently and with a great individual. So thank you again. So with that, we're going to move on. We have some late submitted documents this morning, Mr. Vice Chair.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Morning.
I move that the Commission consider the motion to amend Directive 68 to include additional information in quarterly status reports to the Commission, and that the Commission determine, pursuant to 11 CFR Section 2.7D1, that business so requires and that no earlier public announcement was possible. And I further move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of agenda documents number 21-30C and 21-30C1.
Thank you. The Vice Chair is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Yes, Commissioner Walter.
I'm sorry about that. I will support the motion.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous, 6-0. The next item on the agenda, or the first item on this agenda, is advisory opinion request 2021-06, submitted on behalf of Representative Robin Kelly in the Democratic Party of Illinois. This was held over from the June 24th meeting. We are again joined by Charles Borden and Sam Brown, who are available to respond to any questions. And the commissioners want to say thank you and welcome again for joining us. We also have from the Office of General Counsel, Heather Philmeyer and Mr. Bob Knott from OGC to discuss the matter. Counsel, OGC, would you like to fill us in on the most recent developments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, commissioners. So before you are four alternative draft advisory opinions, drafts A, B, C, and revised draft C, that respond to a request from Congresswoman Robin Kelly and the Democratic Party of Illinois. The requesters, Congressman Kelly was recently elected to serve as chair of the state party, and the requesters have two questions. First, whether the state party may raise and spend non-federal funds through its non-federal account while Congresswoman Kelly serves as chair. And second, whether the Congresswoman's name and title as chair may appear on the letterhead for solicitations for the non-federal account. Draft A says no to the first question and concludes that the second question is moot. Drafts B and C reach the same basic conclusion on the first question, that the state party may raise and spend non-federal funds through its non-federal account while Congresswoman Kelly serves as chair, but they differ as to the conditions under which the state party may do so. The only difference between draft C and revised draft C is the addition of a footnote on the final page of revised draft C. The drafts also reach the same conclusion on the second question, that the Congresswoman's name and title as chair may not appear on the letterhead for solicitations for the non-federal account, because doing so would identify the solicitations as being sent on Congresswoman Kelly's behalf in violation of the Act Soft Money Prohibition. We did not receive any comments on the request. We did receive one comment on the drafts. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Knapp. Let me turn to my colleagues. Are there any questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Traynor.
I do have one question for counsel for the Illinois Party.
Please proceed.
All right. I was just making sure they were on the screen there. So my question is, if we're unable to come to a conclusion for you today, what options are available to the party with regard to fundraising?
Thank you, Commissioner, for your question. And we'd like to thank the commissioners, all the commissioners, for all of your consideration of our questions and for your hard work on these drafts. So the question is, what options would the party have for fundraising if the commission is unable to reach a consensus on an advisory opinion request? Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
I think that it would continue to clearly be able to raise federal funds subject to the limits and prohibitions of the Act. And then we would have to conduct an analysis, I think, at that time of what other options, if any, may be open to the party. I think that we, pending this advisory opinion process, have not conducted that analysis.
Do you think a declaratory judgment action might be available to you?
That is an option that we have not actively considered. I think certainly there's a range of possibilities that we would want to take a look at in the event that the commission is unable to reach a consensus, but we are hopeful, and we were excited to go through this process and to present an option to the commission for its consideration.
Great, thank you. No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a question, if I don't want to step over any colleagues that were. The revised draft C is a draft that, with some negotiation, I put forth to the commission. Have you had an opportunity to review it?
Yes, Chair, we have had an opportunity to review it.
And this is a cookie question. He's famous for this question, so I'm stealing his question. What are your thoughts on this question, on this draft?
Well, Chair, we think that draft C strikes an appropriate balance between the important interests expressed in BCRA in reducing corruption and the appearance of corruption, and retaining an ability for federal office holders to serve in state party organizations. So we support draft C. As we discussed in the prior open meeting, we're comfortable with the modifications to option one that are contained in revised draft C. And we would be certainly willing to proceed on this basis. We would welcome it if the commission were to adopt draft C. And we think draft C is also consistent with Congresswoman Kelly's vision of an expanded state party organization that brings more voices into the party and allows them to be a part of the party operations. So if the commission were to adopt draft C, the party would be very excited to proceed under that basis.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Colleagues? If there are no further questions, I see the vice chair is unmuted. Vice chair.
Madam Chair, I was about to make a motion
please do.
In light of the silence from my colleagues. in this matter, I move the adoption of revised draft C, agenda document 21-31C1.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there a discussion on this motion?
Could you clarify? I couldn't hear.
The motion, Vice Chair, please.
Or C.
The motion is to adopt the revised draft C circulated this morning.
C? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
C as in Charlie.
Commissioner Walter, were you able to hear the motion?
Yes, I have a question. as I understand it, Commissioner Weintraub had some issues at some point, and I'm wondering if those remain or if there's some other issues.
Commissioner Weintraub, would you like to?
I wasn't planning to, but okay. I'm always happy to answer a question from a colleague. I am reluctantly not going to support the motion. I still have the same concerns that I expressed earlier about, although I think this is an improvement. I'm close, but I can't quite get over the ledge on this. I do have some concerns about somebody, a federal office holder who is subject to all of the restrictions and the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act as the leader of an organization which would be raising soft money, albeit through a special committee that was run by other people. So those concerns remain. I believe there are certainly many ways that the Congresswoman could serve her party and be actively involved in most aspects of its activities. And I certainly applaud her efforts to increase the diversity of viewpoints that are represented within the party, but I'm just not gonna be able to vote yes on this.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Traynor.
So I am planning on supporting the Vice Chair's motion, but I just want to note that I think that it's significant that Congresswoman Kelly and the state party have voluntarily ceased fundraising for their non-federal account pending the commission's answer to this particular question. And I think that it powerfully illustrates the chilling effect that this statute has on important First Amendment rights for political fundraising and spending. And even more specifically, because the statute prohibits a federal office holder from lawfully raising non-federal funds under state law. It also effectively limits who the members of the party may choose to represent them, which I think is a clear limitation on the associational rights of the party members. Essentially, what we're doing in this advisory opinion is turning the party chairmanship in Illinois into a purely honorary role without the power to direct a very large portion of the activities that the Democratic Party of Illinois engages in. My understanding is that Congresswoman Kelly ran on a platform of being more inclusive in the activities that take place in the party in Illinois. And now our very act is excluding Congresswoman Kelly from the very activities that she wanted to be more inclusive in. And I think it is very significant that we are excluding the first African-American woman to ever hold this position in Illinois from engaging in those activities. So while I support the revised draft C, I think it is very significant that the statute is having this chilling effect both on First Amendment rights and associational rights in Illinois.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor. Any other comments, colleagues? Well, I will make some. I propose the revised draft because we have a committee that is willing to put these structures and ordinances on themselves to be able to promote the diversity and the recognition of the first African-American to lead that party, that state party. I feel somewhat akin to the representative being in this position and also appreciating the need for diversity within the state parties and the intention of what is happening. And it was a struggle to find a way that fits within the act and still protects the importance of making sure that we do not have the infusion of soft money in our politics to come through this. But I believe that the fact that Representative Kelly is willing to put this structure where she takes away her involvement to name individuals to the special committee still accomplishes her goal. So I will be supporting it. I did present this draft. I thank the vice chair and the Republican caucus for leaning together to work together to find some compromise. I understand that it might not satisfy all sides, but sometimes that's what the commission has to do. We have to find four. So we have found four to answer the question. I understand that Mr. Brown as counsel is satisfied with that. And at the appropriate time, I will be voting to support the vice chair's motion. So thank you. Any further comments? I don't see any.
Madam Chair?
Yes, I do. Commissioner Walker.
I share the concern of Commissioner Walker, but I also recognize that we're at a point now where we need to consider a number of issues, and I'm going to go ahead and support it.
Thank you. We have the vice chair's motion before the commission. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion passes with 5 voting in favor. The vice chair, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Walther, and myself, 1 voting against, Commissioner Weintraub. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to the Office of General Counsel. And we will now proceed to the next item on the agenda. The next item on our agenda, forgive me, I just turned all the way past it on my pages, is advisory opinion request 2021-07 submitted on behalf of PAC Management Services, LLC. I do not see him, but I understand that we are to be joined by Council Dan Backer.
I'm here, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Backer. He'll be available to respond to questions. And I also want to say welcome. From the Office of General Counsel, we have Mr. Weinzinger, and Ms. Rothstein from OGC here to discuss the matter. And OGC, if you would like to proceed with the presentation, please do so.
Thank you, Chair Broussard. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 2131A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by PAC-MS. The requester is a for-profit LLC that is treated as a partnership for federal tax purposes, with each partner taxed as an S corporation. It has several questions regarding whether it may allow individuals to solicit and make contributions to political committees via its online platform. The draft concludes that the Act and Commission regulations would not prohibit PAC-MS's proposed services, and that the proposed services would not cause PAC-MS to make, facilitate, or be a conduit for contributions, to incur registration or reporting obligations, or to be a commercial vendor under 11 CFR 114.2F or 116.1C. The draft also concludes that PAC-MS may allow individuals who work for corporations and trade associations acting in their personal capacities to solicit contributions via its online platform. We received no comments on the request or on the draft, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair.
I have some questions for Mr. Backer, if he's available.
Mr. Backer?
I am here, Madam Chair.
Okay. Good morning, sir.
Good morning,
thanks for being with us. Sorry, it's not in person. I'm trying to, I guess, understand some of the factual predicates. So in your request, you characterize, is PAC-MS an appropriate way of referring to this group? What's the shorthand as you pronounce it?
PAC-MS is how we refer to it in shorthand.
All right, great. I always worry about acronyms. That it provides, and I'm quoting here from your request, a commercial service of facilitating independent expenditures at the usual and ordinary fair market price by individuals and committees wishing to engage in political speech with respect to state legislative elections. Is that right?
Yes.
Could you just sort of explain in general terms how TACMS facilitates IEs at the state level? So facilitates is one of those words that can mean a lot of things. I'm just sort of curious in practice what that facilitation looks like.
Sure. In general, because every state has its own set of laws that would have to be complied with. But in general, a political committee wants to support the election of a candidate for state delegate, for example, and wants to do a mailer or an email ad or run a field program. That committee could pay PAC Management Services to organize and conduct that activity.
And will PACMS provide this sort of facilitation for IEs or expenditures in federal elections?
It's not intended to do so. It's not ruled out, but the focus of that part of the business is, a part of its business is on state legislative races.
So moving on slightly, you made it very clear in the request that federal candidates, political committees, political party committees, and their agents cannot serve as solicitors within PACMS. What's the purpose of that restriction?
To avoid FEC complaints that would incur legal fees to have to respond to.
So the request also, and this may have the same answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. Your request states that individuals who simultaneously serve as a solicitor within PACMS and as an agent of PAC candidate party may not serve as a solicitor in their capacity as an agent. So my question to you is, can you clarify that an agent cannot serve as a solicitor at all on PACMS, not merely cannot serve as a solicitor in that individual's capacity as an agent? So putting it, I guess, in more standard English, if someone comes in with wearing the hat of an agent of a federal candidate, party, committee, et cetera, I understand they can't serve as a solicitor. If they take that hat off, are they permitted to serve as a solicitor in some other capacity, personally or as an agent of some other sort of organization?
So I think it's easiest to answer with an example. If Dan Backer is a fundraising vendor or a fundraiser for candidate Smith, Dan Backer would not be permitted to use this platform to raise money for candidate Smith, because then that would essentially, in our view, make PAC Management Services look like a vendor to that candidate, which it does not want to be. However, if Dan Backer wants to raise money for his pal Joe, who's running for Congress, we want to allow that activity to occur.
Okay,
It's difficult to sort of parse that without having an active monitoring process in place. We don't know when a solicitor signs up, who exactly they might be working for at any given time. And so there's an element of an inability to monitor that. And, we'd like to be able to trust people, but we don't want to incur frivolous FEC complaints that would then require extensive legal fees to have to defend.
So understood. Just to clarify then, the limitation on serving as a solicitor is tied to the scope of the agency relationship.
Correct.
At least as the contract would be written.
Correct. I apologize. I have to mute and step away for one moment. I apologize for that. The delivery company just chose now to deliver.
Madam Chair.
Hi, Chair.
We have all been there. This is the exciting time in which we live. So thank you. Just so the record's clear, I'm not sure that you had a chance to fully answer my follow-up. So am I right that the limitation on solicitation would be limited to the scope of the agency relationship?
Correct.
So turning to the ownership structure, who, if you know, answer this to the extent you can, but you know, we, with the understanding it may be material to what we end up approving, who are the owners of the S corporations that are partners in PAC-MS?
I am not going to be able to answer that question. I will say that the S-Corp is taxed as a corporation, and the purpose of the clarity in that regard is that it's clear that it would be to the extent that if there would have been a contribution occurring, it would have been being done by a corporation and thus prohibited.
That's one of my first, that's one of my follow-up questions, so thank you. The other is, and again, if you can't answer this, understood, but I'm going to ask, are the owners of the S corporations candidates, PACs, party committees, or any of their agents?
The ownership are not candidates, PACs, or party committees. They're not agents in an individual capacity, but the PAC Management Services is itself potentially an agent of candidates, PACs, and party committees to the extent that it does provide services to them. Specifically FEC reporting and compliance services.
But the ownership of the S corporations is not, are not agents of what is called in federally regulated entities.
Not in the context in which I believe you mean it, no.
Okay. Are they foreign principals under the meaning of 22 USC 611?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. The supplemental information states that PAC-MS will match clients to solicitors, and I've been kind of struggling with what that would look like in practice, because you know PAC-MS can't, as I read the request, will not be suggesting solicitors to clients, but will be matching solicitors to clients. Can you give me a sense or an example of what that'll look like in practice?
I think that might just be a lack of clarity that occurred in email. When we discussed this matching process, it's essentially that Dan Backer happens to be a solicitor on this platform. Alan Dickerson is an individual who wishes to contribute, and Alan Dickerson can choose these individuals that he's aware of, can essentially invite them to solicit him. It is not that PAC-MS is saying, hey, you two should meet. And I think that might not have come over clearly. The only introductions between solicitors and between solicitors and the individuals that they are soliciting is at the request of the individual being solicited. So they would have to know that Dan Backer is a solicitor in order to be invited. They might meet in various ways offline and not on the platform, but the communication has to come from that perspective.
So let me ask sort of a concrete example in that regard. So this is something where I'll use your example. I'm coming in as the client, and I have a solicitor that I know I want to work with. How would I go about bringing that to PAC-MS's attention? I mean, is there sort of a drop-down menu or search function where I'd be able to look this person up? Or is it something where I would have to, what's, I guess, the mechanism by which I would bring that to your attention?
There would be the ability for you as a client to invite somebody to solicit you. And if they're not on the platform, they're going to be getting, it would generate an email to that individual's email address. So you would use the platform, send an email, it's an automated process to Dan Backer, who's not on the platform. Dan Backer receives that and then goes through the registration process to become a solicitor and can then only solicit the person who invited him. If Dan Backer is already on the platform, then the act of sending that solicitation, assuming it's the same email address, both on the solicitor's account and that the client is using, that would be a matching function where it would say, oh, he's already on the platform, and that would allow that solicitation to be matched right at that point.
So if that's how this would all work, I guess my question is if taking your example, if I want to make contributions and I already have someone I work with in that regard, presumably that person can make recommendations directly to me and is capable of forwarding on any contributions I might make to the recipient committees. But I guess the question is, aside from serving as a middleman on the financial transaction, are there other services that PACMS is providing?
In respect to this relationship, I think there's the part of the value is the ability to track the amount of contributions that the individual client is making. Several years ago, in the lead up to McCutcheon v. FEC, for example, I represented a client who was one of several hundred individuals who received, who a complaint was filed against because they had inadvertently exceeded the aggregate limits at the time. And if their perspective was, well, I had no idea, I wasn't paying attention. And I think while that's no longer a legal concern, I do think there are plenty of folks who contribute money to candidates would like to keep track of that in an easy and efficient manner. You know, I know for myself that I, you know, I've been in that situation where I've supported somebody and then not remembered whether I supported them or not. And then I couldn't say when they called me up, you know, Dan, will you cut me a check? Like, well, I couldn't say, no, I just cut you a check like a few months ago. And so I ended up having to contribute twice. Lovely candidate, wish they'd won. But I think the issue is that ability to keep tabs on one's political giving is very helpful. And at the same time, having those funds in this process makes it easier and more efficient, particularly in the sense that, for example, earlier this morning, I received a call from a fundraiser for a candidate, and they'd asked me a month ago whether I would contribute, and I'd said yes, and I said, oh, well, send me an email or a link, and I'll do it, and they didn't, I'd forgotten, and until today, and now they just sent me the link, but that's, you know, from the perspective of, you know, individuals who want to support candidates, those deadlines matter, quarterly deadlines, et cetera. So there's a benefit to sort of having those funds right there and having the solicitation be that much of a one-click process. I could be wrong, but I do think there's enough of a market of individuals who will value those services to make this viable.
No, that's helpful. I'm not questioning your market research. I'm trying to understand how this kind of all plays out in practice. So I guess relatedly and kind of a follow-up on what you just said, the intention is to allow tracking by the clients of PACMS, but the intention is not to facilitate or automate or otherwise handle the filing of reports with the commission. This is an internal function for the clients.
Correct. The individual client presumably has no report to file with the commission because they're individual donors making, individual contributors making individual contributions. That information from them is forwarded on to the recipient candidates that they might choose to contribute to, and they are filing their own reports. Theoretically, they may also be, those federal candidates may be PACMS clients for FEC reporting, but those are separate processes that aren't directly connected.
Okay. So the request talks about kind of how the funds are handled, and it says that PACMS will, and here I'm quoting, automatically withdraw from the account whatever service fee is charged for the transaction by the debit or credit card company. Are you comfortable confirming that PACMS will be charging that fee directly, passing along the fee charged by the card company, as opposed to, I guess, adding something on top of it?
So the fee the fee would be charged on top. So let's say an individual is, there's two, actually, I guess there's only one part. When an individual puts their funds into into PACMS, there's a fee that's charged. Right now, the intent is that there's going to be a credit card processing fee to do this. Let's say it's 3%. And so that amount could be withdrawn or it could be charged on top. It's becoming an interesting technical issue, whether, you know, which way we may end up having to go on that. But either way, those funds are paid by the individual client at the point when they're putting their money into PACMS. PACMS is not paying those fees.
I appreciate that. That's helpful, and I'm not being clear. So I understand that PACMS is charging a fee for service at whatever the market will bear. I get that. In addition to that fee for service, PACMS will be passing along the exchange fee or other transaction fee from the use of a credit or debit card. My question is merely, will that be a straight pass on of the actual cost of the exchange or transaction fee?
It will be
just passing along the cost, or is that part of the fee structure?
it's just passing along that cost. It's not included in the fee structure. That may be something that changes down the road. We're learning interesting things in the development of the technology that may change that. But for now, it's intended to be isolated from the service fee itself.
No, that's exactly what I was asking. Thank you. Is there likely or is there anticipated to be a cost for transactions? I understand you have, you know, the cost of the credit or debit card services, which will be passed along at cost. My question is, will there be any fee structure associated with the decision to pass along, basically to make the transfer from the PACMS account to the recipient committee account? Or is the fee for service going to be the fee structure standing alone?
The fee for service is the fee structure for the process. So any individual contribution by client A to candidate B does not itself carry any charge by PACMS. That same transaction should not include any fees that are accrued to PACMS. Our expectation is these are ACH or wire transfers, which to PACMS, there's no charge by our bank for those services. In the odd chance that there is a service fee that is somehow generated, you know, and I can't imagine what it was, but if there was some external service fee, that would be passed along. But PACMS isn't charging on a per transaction basis.
Thank you. And that would be true also of charges to contributors or recipients of the contributions that are forwarded by solicitors using the PACMS process.
PACMS,
so you're not just...
We're not going to charge the
There's
people,
no
the recipients. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I have a few more questions, but I'm worried that maybe I'm monopolizing the commission's time. So I'll pause here in case any of my colleagues have a couple of questions, then I can finish up.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I'm going to take that opportunity to jump in myself and then feel free to return. Mr. Backer, I want to talk about the $100 fee that you've mentioned in the request that you, maybe for this. This is going to be a yearly fee that you'll assess to your clients?
Correct.
And is it renewed automatically?
We're not planning on making it an automatic fee. There would be a reminder process, like your bill is coming up, please confirm.
Okay. And if they do not confirm, then they are removed from the service.
Correct. And presumably there'd be if they missed the 1 year anniversary, there'd be a process of, hey, you missed your fee messages. But ultimately, there would be, if they don't renew, their funds are refunded to them and there would not be some charge for that.
Okay. And for your clients that, so they placed the $5,000 in there and they make no contributions at all during that year, do you anticipate a means of returning the funds after the completion of an election cycle or after that year when they choose not to renew? What happens to the funds if you have a client that doesn't take advantage of the service?
If they choose to leave the platform or don't renew, they would receive their funds back by ACH or wire. If they choose to renew and simply have money there but don't use it, nothing. The money just sits there. There's no interest earned on those funds, nor does PACMS earn interest on the funds in it either. So it would be weird. It would sit there. I would imagine it's possible that after an extended period of inactivity, we might worry whether the contributor is in fact alive if they're not engaging in any way, and would probably reach out. But we hadn't really developed a technical solution for that.
Okay. And does PACMS anticipate suggesting or recommending candidates or political committees or et cetera to the designated solicitors?
No.
And will a client be able to name or designate an individual affiliated or employed with PACMS to solicit the clients?
Theoretically, they could, but it's going to be the policy of PACMS that no PACMS employees are utilizing this platform in this way.
That's Vice Chair or colleagues. Anyone else want to jump in?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Cooksey, please.
I think just one question for right now.
Are the registered solicitors, do they receive any payment or commission or remuneration from PACMS as a result of receiving contributions? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair.
That was actually efficient because several of the questions I was going to ask were asked by my colleagues. So, this is something of a takeoff of the chair's question, Mr. Backer. Is there a process in place for clients to seek refunds of contributions? And if so, what does that look like?
To seek a refund of the contribution they've made to a candidate?
Correct.
I don't anticipate there be creating a process for PACMS to do that. They would have to communicate directly to the candidates that they've contributed to.
Okay.
In which case, the refund would go back to that individual contributor, who, of course, is the contributor of record for the contribution.
Roger. So looking at this from the recipient standpoint, is there a process by which a recipient committee can ask PACMS for additional information? I'm thinking here of the sort of categories of information that would fall into the best efforts regulation. Or do they need to go directly back to the client in order to obtain that?
They'd be able to do both. As a practical matter, the only way that PACMS can transfer the funds to the individual recipient candidates is by communicating with somebody in that entity, that campaign, to get the ACHR wire information, presumably the treasurer or their campaign finance reporting people. So there's going to be a relationship that exists for that purpose. They can reach out and ask PACMS. PACMS would presumably have that as it's required for the registration of the individual contributor. If for some reason there was a data issue, we could fix that. If for some reason they left it blank, they could always just reach out to the contributor since they would have that contributor's information.
Okay. So when we were talking earlier, you mentioned that one of the advantages of the product is the ability to track contributions, both temporarily and I presume against contribution limits, things of that nature. So I know the platform is intended to review other contributions by the donor to the recipient and to check for excessive amounts. My question is, as part of that technical process, would PACMS be consulting the FEC's website or FEC reports?
No, the information recorder for each individual contributor would be just their activity through the PACMS platform. My presumption would be that any use by PACMS of that information would violate the prohibition on the commercial use of FEC reporting data. We have not developed, but we've thought about the idea of allowing individual contributors to manually enter their other contributions they've done offline into the tracking mechanism. That's a technical question that we're just not at a point to have done yet. But that would allow them to keep track of. But that would be done by them as an individual, just typing it in themselves, not utilizing external sources.
And then my last question. Will anyone in the ownership structure, and here I'm also including the S corporations, be permitted to serve as a solicitor?
Well, the legal entities can't solicit because they're not individuals. The solicitation is limited to individuals. It's possible. I don't believe it is anticipated. There's not going to be a prohibition on it because at the end of the day, these are ultimately they're all U.S. individuals who would otherwise be able to ask friends for money. There's no reason they wouldn't be able to do it in this platform. I just don't know that there's any intention that it be done so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Are there any further questions for Mr. Backer or OGC?
Madam Chair, I do have a question for OGC.
Commissioner Traynor.
So how much longer do we have to get an answer to Mr. Backer?
We are right on the deadline. It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the deadline. So Mr. Backer, would you be willing to give us an extension to get you an answer to your question?
I mean, sure, if you felt that was necessary, I would, of course, consent to an extension. Love the answer you guys already have, though.
I think if we could have probably another couple of weeks, it would be beneficial to both you and the commission.
That would be fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor. With that, I want to poll my colleagues. Any further questions? None. We will be holding this matter over to a future open meeting. Thank you very much, Mr. Backer, for your attendance today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners.
The next item on the agenda is the motion to amend Directive 68 to include additional information in the quarterly status reports to the Commission. The memorandum from Commissioner Cooksey was held over from our last open meeting. Commissioner Cooksey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have another substantive presentation to add to the robust discussion we had at the last open meeting. As my colleagues, I'm sure, remember, this is just a proposal to expand our quarterly status of enforcement reports to allow us to keep track of split but unclosed cases so that they can be put into a separate category and taken out of categories that I think aren't reflective of their actual status. I recirculated these to colleagues after our last open meeting to solicit feedback. There hasn't been any response to that. I think it's reasonable to expect, based on our previous meeting, that this proposal may not be adopted today. But of course, you know, this will be an issue I expect is going to continue to come up with this proposal and other proposals to improve transparency and accountability at the commission as we do our work. So I'm sure there will be more to come. But with that said, if, you know, for this specific proposal, I would just like to have a vote on it for the record. So at the appropriate time, unless there's any other discussion, I will make a motion to have that vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. Colleagues? So, Commissioner Cooksey?
Madam Chair, thank you. I move the adoption of my amendment to Directive 68 to include additional information in the quarterly status reports to the commission, which is agenda document 21-26-A, subject to the edit recommended by the Office of General Counsel that the phrase, quote, has voted to take one or more of the following actions, end quote, be changed to, quote, has voted on a motion to take one or more of the following actions, end quote.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. Is there a discussion on this motion? None. Commissioner Weintraub?
I don't want to belabor the discussion. I will not be supporting the motion for reasons that have been stated previously.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Anything further? Then we'll call the question to the motion of Commissioner Cooksey. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, please say no. No.
No.
No.
The motion fails with 3 voting in favor, Commissioner Cooksey, the Vice Chair, and Commissioner Traynor, 3 voting against, Commissioner Weintraub, Walther, and myself. Thank you. I think this meeting has moved quickly, even though we started late. I do appreciate everyone. Thank you for your patience with our delay. So I'm going to turn to the staff director. Are there any management or administrative matters the commission needs to consider today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. The meeting stands adjourned.